Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. I know you hear me say this every week, but it's truth. This is one of my favorite times of the week. I just love being here, talking to you, sharing with you, and hopefully you sharing with me. And I just love bringing along my great friend here, Dr. Richard Presser.
Hi, Carolyn. Hi, everyone. And I will just reinforce what Carolyn says. I tell you, she has to be pretty under the weather, you might say, to not be here. She really makes a point of being present at these shows. She just loves them.
Thank you, Richard. I do. And hopefully people out there love the program as much as we do. And for those who get our emails, you will know that tonight we have, I always say this every week, a very special guest, because every week I really do feel like we have a special guest. You know, we've had some tremendous, incredibly beautiful people. I'm thinking of Ganji. And who are some of the other ones, Richard, that we've had recently? That
Martin Luther King is one.
We
had a revisit from Yeshua recently.
Yeah.
There's been quite a collection from various places, Akhenaten and his young son, Tutankhamun, and so on. Quite an interesting collection over time.
Yes, we really have. And so many of these have been males. Beautiful men stepping forward with incredibly beautiful messages. And today we have, you might say, a change of pace, Joan of Arc. And these individuals, I just would like to mention again how we come about choosing those who will come and bring forth information is we ask our listeners and our readers names of people who they feel they want to know more about. And we put them on a list. And each week before we do a show, we go through the list and one will come forth. And it is just amazing, isn't it, Richard, how you might say they put their hand up because they
Indeed.
have an important message to bring forth in this time and in this place. And then we tell people who it's going to be. And sometimes I look up information about the individual because I don't know a lot about them. Now, Joan of Arc, for instance, she is a famous name, a patron of the French. She was beatified, canonized, made a saint by the Catholic Church. And yet, there's not a lot that I knew about her personally. I had some general ideas. But when I went to Wikipedia, the encyclopedia on the internet, and I started reading about her bravery and the part that she played in freeing the French from the English, and the fact of her age, I really didn't realize that, well, maybe a lot of you know that she eventually was burned at the stake. She was 19. So that meant she did all of these remarkable When you read the story of her life and the remarkable things that she did in battle, how she was wounded, how she led men, how she had these victories. And to do all of this before the age of 19, I was just amazed at all of this. And so I am in awe at Saint Joan of Arc coming forth with a message for us in this time and place, something that she feels would be meaningful to us. And so one of the things that we do at the beginning of each one of our shows is I ask Richard to connect with her and to describe her energy, so you can feel to a certain extent the sweetness of this young lady. And so if you're interested in working with this, relax as you listen, take a deep breath, and envision, either call her name quietly and envision a picture of what you might think of her in your third eye, and then focus your attention down into the heart area, where is the heart mind, the heart center, the heart chakra, and listen to Richard's description of her energy, and hopefully you will feel connected to her also, because she has this sweetness about her, this gentleness. And so, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to take over now and tell us what you're feeling.
Yes, I experience her energy as very heart-centered. There is this power that I experience, this directness and yet this genuineness. Power and yet this, as Carolyn said, this feminine gentleness about her. Very interesting combination. You can, or at least I can sense her directness, her sense of cutting through to what was the essence of things. There is this, as I said, almost like this, you could call it a sword of truth, as though she would cut through to what was the essence of things. It's just in her nature, in the energy of her as I experience it. So very much heart-centered, quite powerful, and very, you might say, upfront, and yet this gentleness. Very interesting.
I noticed some conversation in the background. I'm going to ask BBS to check and see if we've got some sort of bleed through. I'm hearing a conversation in the background. So if BBS would please check that and see if they can give us a hand, we would appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. I'm still hearing noise in the background.
I don't hear it here, Carolyn. I'm not sure why.
Maybe it just must be me. Okay. If you don't hear it, then it's probably clear. It just stopped. Okay, this is great. I really wanted a clear connection, because I want everybody to hear the message that Joan is going to bring forth. So, if you'd be kind enough, Richard, to again connect with her and listen to the message and repeat it for our audience as to what she wishes to tell the people of our time.
And she's here, and she is saying, "My dear friends, it is an honor to be able to come forth and to speak with you in this manner. It is not something that I envisaged ever being able to do from where I now reside. And as I watch this work of Carolyn and Richard unfold in these radio shows, it occurred to me that the opportunity may arise for me to speak with you in this way. And so I thank the two of them for opening this door to me, that I might contribute a little to those who listen to these recordings or this show live. And so my particular desire to come forth and to speak with you was to share with you some links between my time and your time. On the surface, to begin with, there were parallels, if you will, between my time and yours, in the sense that there was a tyranny. There were those who wished to control the French, and those who were ostensibly leading the French armies at the time were, you might say, conservative in their approach and very resigned. There had been a period of French powerlessness, you might say. And so this had become inculcated into the thinking of the military leadership. And as those of you who may have read my story a little would understand, I felt guided. I experienced visions of great spiritual leaders from a very early age. From the age of 12, these experiences began to come to me. And so I felt guided through this in terms of what I chose to do. And indeed, the approaches I took as a military leader, which is what I became, were also guided and directed in this same manner. So whilst, yes, I had to choose to walk that path and to trust what I was given, and indeed, on a level, step into my own power to step forth and to demonstrate that leadership, because no one from the other side ultimately can have you do this. It is something you have to choose in your dimension. I very much felt guided to take the steps that I took. And in so doing, I brought a different approach to dealing with, you might say, the tyranny that existed in that time, and indeed the lack of true leadership that existed within the French military at the time. And I mention this to you because I see parallels between my time and yours. You live in a time when there are those who wish to control all of humanity, and they do it for the most part quite secretively. They have others execute aspects of their approach, their strategy, so it is not immediately obvious to humanity in general what is being arranged, what is being organized in the background. And yet, with time, many of you have come to understand this tyranny which is in place, this manipulation of so much of your lives. And indeed, some of the threads which represent that manipulation were in place in my time, as I now understand it, but that was not the focus of my life. And I mention this to you because it is important that all of you begin to stand up in your own way. I'm not suggesting that you should take the kind of steps that I took, because they were the steps for me to take at that time. I understood that that was my mission, and I executed it in the best way I was able. And for each of you, you need to begin to be the leaders of your own lives. It depends who you are and what role you have come forth to fulfill, the nature of how that leadership is expressed. Clearly, there are some among you who will play a more public leadership role as events unfold in this special time in which you live. But all of you have a role to play as leaders of your own lives. This, above all else, forms the foundation of any other form of leadership that you might express. So much leadership in your time is based on organizational leadership, organizational power, if you will. People take their power to lead from the organizations of which they are part. And so often the journey to positions of power in organizations is through deceit and other mechanisms. It is not a structure which is predisposed to honesty and integrity for the most part. Whereas personal leadership, leadership growing from the claiming of one's personal power, is a very different issue. It is not something that anybody can take from you unless you are willing to give it. And so I urge all of you to stand in the power of who and what you are, to stand in the understanding that you have been building about what this time is about and what is unfolding. This is very important because most of you that are listening to this message from me will have roles in some form of leadership. Not only leadership of your own lives, but perhaps representing as an example to those around you within your community of what is unfolding, to provide direction and understanding as, for example, the rejuvenation of humanity flows forth. As this begins to unfold, most people will be in shock and disbelief. And you, my friends, virtually all of you who will listen to this will be amongst the vanguard of this transition. And so it is important that you claim your leadership of your own life now to do the work you need to do, to build the understanding of who and what you are, to heal your lives so that you are ready to fulfill these roles, because it is very important that you build this foundation within yourself so that you can be that example to others and so that you do not get caught in the egoic issues of believing that this in some way is about you and your self-importance. I am not saying you should not claim your power. This is one of the distortions that has been promulgated upon humanity, that standing in the power and the truth of who and what you are is in some way egoic. This is not so. As Carolyn says, this is true humility. It is standing in the truth of who and what you are. That is a humble place to stand, not in denial of yourself, but in the truth of who and what you are. This is important, and this is what I encourage all of you to do in this time. And so this is the first part of my message. And the second part of my message is to give you some context of who I was and why I was guided to do what I did, because I came for that specific purpose and I achieved my purpose. Some of you understand that I was executed, burnt at the stake, at the age of 19. Most of humanity continues to be amazed that I died at such a young age and did all that I did as a teenager. But that is the case. And I came forth for a specific purpose. And that purpose was to ensure that France remained in the hands of the French, that the French rediscovered their power and their ability to control their own destiny. And that is why I pursued the path I did, to ensure that there was a French king in place and there was enough self-belief amongst the French to be able to move forward. And the underlying issue in all of this, which is something that is not understood, is that the primary reason I was driven to do this was to protect the Gothic cathedrals of France, because it was understood by the spiritual hierarchy that should the English have come to control France, that if not immediately, then relatively quickly, these wondrous buildings would have been destroyed. They would have, at the very least, fallen into ruin. And if you examine their history, yes, some of them have suffered from fire and have had roofs replaced and so on, but for the most part, these buildings are intact. And those buildings were not only built for that time by the Templars, but indeed were built for your time, because they perform important energetic amplification work that is not well understood. This information will come forth in the near future as the work that these two are doing, bringing forth messages from the Templars, of which they were part in those times, to explain what the cathedrals truly were about, both in that time and this time. You will understand why this mission was important. And this is not something that has ever been spoken publicly before. Indeed, it was not something that I understood when I was alive. I was simply focused on fulfilling what I was guided to do, and that was to ensure that the Dauphin, the king in waiting, was crowned as the legitimate French king, which I achieved. And so these are the key messages I wanted you to understand, both the connection between the stand that I took in my life and the stand I encourage you to take in yours, and the connection between what I was doing in this very special time in which you live upon this beautiful planet. And so it is.
Thank you, June. I have so many places to go, so many questions. It's difficult to decide which way to go. I think I'm going to delve in this area a little bit with the Gothic cathedrals. We, Richard and I, spoke to Joan earlier about, you know, her message, and we were interested in why this young lady came forth with such a mission. And we learned then that the spiritual hierarchy would understand that if France did not was not governed by French, that the Gothic cathedrals were in jeopardy. And that surprised us. We had no concept at the time that this sort of planning was behind Joan's mission. And Richard and I have been working very diligently with the Templars, understanding the true value and the true use of the Gothic cathedrals back in the time when they were built and the purpose for today. And so when I found that out, I was just so intrigued at that. And you'll hear more about this work in the relatively near future regarding the Templars and the Gothic cathedrals that they brought forth. So, Joan, thank you so much for making that also a part of your message. Going to the first part of what she discussed, she had visions when she was 12, and according to the article that I have, she was alone in a field and saw visions of St. Michael, St. Catherine, and St. Margaret. And so I would like to ask Joan what this was like. Did you see these three individuals as people in physical form? Give us some insight as to what this was like. I mean, this had to have been an extraordinary event to a young lady, 12 years old, to see these kind of visions. So give us some thoughts of what that must have been like, if you would.
It is not well understood that my experiences of going within and having a sense of, you might say, visions began much earlier than this. Indeed, it was really with me throughout my life. And so, you might say, communicating with beings on the other side was something that was an inherent aspect of my nature from a very young age. And so, the time of that vision was a time when I was, you might say, daydreaming. You might say I was perhaps meditating in a sense. And so I was open to that kind of experience. That is not to say that I expected that experience, but that I was open to it and that I recognized that, in a sense, my experiences had prepared me for that unfolding. And so it certainly was a surprise to me and of a far more comprehensive nature than I had ever expected would unfold. However, in the sense that I experienced beings from the other side of the veil in this way, it was not a surprise. And the experience indeed included visual experience, because I came forth in a very long line of beings from my soul who have been able to communicate with beings on the other side of the veil in that manner. And so it was not difficult in that sense for me to do. And so I did indeed experience them in that inner vision. I saw them, they presented themselves to me and explained who they were. And it was from that moment that I began to understand the mission that I had in that life. And so 12 seems a very young age to be experiencing such a thing, and in a sense that is true. However, it's important to recognize that in some ways people grew up a lot more quickly in those times. Most people did not live to 70 or so years of age as you do today. Rather, many people died at 30 or 35 or even younger. And so it was not unusual in those times for an individual of 13, 14 or 15 to be stepping forth in life, in a sense, to be working, to be generating an income and to be beginning to unfold their mature lives. And so 12 today seems very young to you, but it was not such a surprise, in a sense, that they should come forth at that point in my life to give me some direction of how my mission should unfold.
Thank you, Joan. In the early part of your message, one of the words that you used is the word trust. And Richard and I work with a lot of people to work through the spiritual aspects from the right side of the brain. That is the spiritual side that you can actually do the kind of work that you did by going within and communicating with people on the other side. And there is an issue that it seems to me, at least, that many people have, is this thought of trust. And I know from experience that if people do not trust what they are doing, it shuts them down. And so, my dear Joan, can you give some thought or you might say guidance to those who maybe don't trust themselves, how they might begin to trust themselves, or at least some thought on how trust could be worked into their meditation?
It is an interesting question that you raise. In your time, the scientific model has become so dominant in thinking. And for so many the so-called spiritual aspect is controlled by, in your countries, the church, the Christian church, if you will. And so these mystical aspects have been powerfully suppressed by both of these forces in their own way. And as you would recognize, the Catholic Church has taught that channeling is of the devil. And so most people in your time don't recognize the degree to which this has shut down any trust of this kind of process. And it is a natural part of being a human being to be able to do this. I would also say that the scientific process in your time has essentially encouraged the perception that there is no spiritual aspect which exists, that there are no creator beings of any type. Beginning with all, there is no such thing exists. And so all of this, in a sense, weighs on those who begin to walk this path, even though they may not be consciously aware of it. And so there is this lack of trust. And the key part of this is to begin to trust your intuition, to begin to recognize that you have this inner guidance that is built into you, that again you've been encouraged to distrust, but indeed is really the guiding system within you that will help to steer you where you need to go. It is extremely powerful and it is there for everyone, and indeed it is a subtle mechanism by which not only your soul, if you will, seeks to guide you, but indeed other beings will communicate with you in a subtle way through that intuitive sense. They will feed you guidance and understanding through that intuitive sense. And so this really is the first step in many ways to beginning to open these doors, to beginning to trust yourself, because you are so much more than what you take yourselves to be today. You have been so powerfully discouraged from valuing yourselves, from trusting the power and the truth of who and what you are. You're encouraged to believe that perhaps you are just this flesh and bone that makes up the physical body, and any sense of connection to your God must be via some form of religious mechanism, whether it be Christianity or Buddhism or Islam or whatever. But the truth of the matter is that none of those things are true. That this is about your experience of yourself primarily. And as you begin to open these doors, firstly, you can get some assistance if you choose it through the right brain magic work that these two teach. But apart from that, there are mechanisms that you can use to assist yourselves as you begin to receive information in some form or another. Look for validation, for verification. For example, if you begin to trust your intuition, take the steps that you feel drawn to and examine the outcomes, examine the connections that arise, but where they lead you to. This is an important process to begin to undertake. But where, as I said, you are given information of some sort, begin to examine it. Begin to look for verification within the context of your own life, because the verification will be available to you. It is the nature of how this is done. And, for example, I am aware that when Carolyn began to get information from that past life expression of her as the daughter of Caesar, as Julia in Rome. Julia showed herself to Carolyn dressed in silks of particular colours, and Carolyn checked that silk was available in Rome at that time, and indeed the dyes were available at that time within Rome to be able to bring forth those colours. This is the kind of research that you can do if that is relevant to your experience. And so you need to begin to trust this truth of yourselves, that you are powerful, extraordinary spiritual beings having a human experience, and begin to trust that fundamental truth of yourselves, that this ability to communicate with other forms of consciousness, with beings on the other side of the veil, with expressions of consciousness within your dimension, such as plants and animals and crystals and so on, is all within your ability, within your understanding. And so it is to take the steps that emerge in front of you, whatever they may be, but take those steps and begin to see what unfolds. And as you take those steps, you will begin to grow in your trust of what is unfolding in front of you.
Thank you, Jim. That is such excellent advice. One of the things that I suggest to people is to have a journal of some sort, that when you this information comes up, you put that in the journal, and then when it is validated, you state that in the journal also, because once you start validating what you're receiving, it really does open up the doors of trust. Well, we have a lot more questions, but we're going to take a question from the audience. And Helen from the Michigan area is on line one.
So this is Helen from the Bay Area.
Oh, from the Bay Area.
other side of the country, but...
The other side of the country. Okay.
Yeah.
We're glad. Welcome, Helen.
Thank you.
What question do you have for our dear friend Joan?
Yes, and I connect with Joan from a different spiritual group, and I follow with two groups which I trust the information they bring forth and resonate with me a great deal. And one of them is you and Richard, the 2012 Countdown. The question I have is, I learned that Joan is also the reincarnation of a queen in Lumeria era. So this is a question I long wondered with you and Richard wanted to ask for quite a while. Yes, you two seems very closely connected with Atlantis culture, prehistory culture. And how about Lumeria?
So let's phrase the question.
Okay.
So that we can direct it at Joan. You want to know from her what? If she's related to a queen in Lemuria?
Yes, yes. And what is her input about the Lumeria culture and Atlantis culture, prehistory culture?
Okay, you want to know if she's related to a queen in Lemuria, and I'm kind of didn't understand the second part of that question.
Okay. Did the Lumeria culture exist at the same time with Atlantis culture?
Oh, okay. It's a question that we're familiar with, but let's see what Joan has to say about it. Richard, did you understand the question?
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks.
It is not widely recognized that the soul that sent me forth is the soul that many of you have come to know as Allura, that high cherubim angel, and indeed that same one that sent Carolyn forth for the majority of what Carolyn represents. And so there are many individuals that you might say I am a reincarnation of, because in truth there is no repeat reincarnation of the particles that were sent forth to be that particular individual. In other words, they all arise separately from the monad which sends them forth. And so, yes, there were certainly aspects of Ellora that were present in the time of Lemuria, just as they were in Atlantis. And it is important to recognize the differences between the Lemurian experience and the Atlantean one. The Lemurian experience, for the most part, predated Atlantis, although there was some overlap. And the time of Lemuria was best represented, if you will, by acknowledging that the physical form was much less solid than it was in Atlantis and indeed in your time. In other words, the body was much more ethereal than you experience the physical body today. And so it was part of the evolutionary plan, if you will, for humanity to take on a more solid physical form as it did in Atlantis, because it made possible many more abilities from a physical perspective. And so you might look in a sense at Lemuria as being a stepping stone to Atlantis. That is not to say one is better nor worse than the other. Some look at Lemuria with great fondness because there was, in a sense, a greater purity, and it did not, from a cultural perspective, if you will, from a spiritual perspective, experience the fall that happened with Atlantis. And so it was not perhaps tainted in the same way, though I will say that the threads of darkness which came to dominate Atlantis, if you will, actually arose in the Atlantean time. And this is explained in the book brought forth by Carolyn from Archangel Michael called Earth History, Past, Present and Future. And if you wish to understand this, I encourage you to get a copy of that book and to read it, because it will help you understand these threads much better than I can explain it here.
Okay. Thank you, June. And thank you for your questions, Helen.
Thank you. So the book is called Earth History, right?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I have it. I need to reread again.
You know, there's so much information, and it's easy to forget it. It's good to reread those occasionally.
Absolutely. YouTube brought enormous information, and really needed some contemplating to absorb them all in. It's so wonderful. It's marvelous.
Thank you, Helen. Appreciate it. On line two, there is an individual named Jean from Missouri. Welcome, Jean.
Hi.
Hi.
You're speaking with my patron saint and one of my favorite heroes of all time.
Wow.
And I'd like to ask her. I've been researching her life all my life. One of the things that always astonished me is, where did she come from? How did she all of a sudden, as a child, have such abilities? It makes me think that she had a long line, a lineage of lives where she had achieved such a great mastery. And I've also been curious if she reincarnated any time since. I understand time is all at one moment, but in our chronology, has she come back?
Well, I understand what you're saying, because we really didn't get into what she accomplished with the military. And if you studied her life, you would certainly understand these points. I mean, she accomplished in a very short period of time with what the French generals couldn't even begin to do in a long period of time. So, yeah, there's a certain amount of awe there. How in the world did she do it? So, Richard, I think this is a two-part question, but the one question is, You know, how did she achieve such greatness at a young age, I suspect? We probably have touched on that somewhat. And Jean raises the question, did this come to her through the reincarnation, this power, you might say, personal power, come from reincarnation and in other lifetimes? And is she planning to come again? This is going to be an interesting answer.
I anticipate that Jean did not hear the answer to the last question, because in a sense it addressed some of the areas that she has raised. And so I shall repeat some aspects of that answer for her, and that is that I was an incarnation of that great soul, Ellora, that is the high cherubim angel. And for those of you that have been keeping close to the work of these two, you will understand that there have been many incarnations of that soul. Some of the individuals who have come forth from that soul include Isis, Kuan Yin, Mother Mary, Mary Magdalene, and many others over history, including the one who founded the Knights Templar. And so there is a great deal of, you might say, soul lineage, incarnational history that in one sense I automatically drew on, though I was not consciously doing so. And of course, as I lived that life, I was not aware of all of this. I was simply aware that I had come to fulfill a mission, and that was made very clear to me. And so I engaged that with all that I was capable of engaging it with. And so, yes, you might say I brought forth or leveraged that experience and the power of that soul. And you might say I have already reincarnated, given that Carolyn is also an aspect of that same great soul.
Well, Jean, you got your answer.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome, dear. I appreciate the question. We mentioned earlier that Joan took a completely different stance as far as the battles with the English were concerned. And she showed great bravery, a swiftness, a desire to move forward where the French generals were, you might say, biding their time. And so I asked you, Joan, with this, these choices that you made, because some of them are quite dramatic, were these your visions suggesting to you what course to take in these battles? Was it your intuition? So give us a little aspect of how you followed these promptings, and basically what kind of promptings were these?
By the time I reached the age where I was, you might say, doing this work, I had grown very trusting of my ability to communicate with those on the other side. And I also trusted the input that came to me intuitively, and I understood the sources of that because I had spent time studying that with those who were guiding me. And so it was really a combination of working in meditation and then trusting the, you might say, in the moment guidance that I received. And so I operated very intuitively in the moment, trusting the guidance that was really coming through me as I stepped forth in this role. And so I really married together my own courage, you could say, with that inner guidance that I trusted implicitly. I could not have undertaken what I undertook without that inner guidance and wisdom which flowed freely forth from within that guided me in all that I did.
Joan, thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for offering your great words of wisdom. And thank you, Richard, for bringing them forth. And as we look over some of the things that Joan has given us, yes, she did tremendous work as a general, as the leader of an army. But I think this great message that she has for us as individuals is what she brought forth is trust, trusting your inner guidance, trusting that you are a soul that is much greater than what we give ourselves credit for, to believe in yourself, to follow these intuitive thoughts, to you might say, open up your mission and follow it, to stand in your own personal power. These are some of the things, the words that she brought forth. And to me, I feel like it is probably the greatest part of the message that she has given to us. Richard, we have 2 minutes. Would you like to use those in giving your thoughts of commenting on things that she brought forth, or do you wish to speak about the Templar information that we're working on or some other project?
Well, I'd just like to, I guess, firstly, reinforce what both you and Joan said. Firstly, thank you, Joan, for coming forth and sharing your information with us. And her words really are very close to my heart, because it is something that I put a lot of focus on, not only in my own life, but encouraging the people that I come into contact with to claim that for themselves. That really it is that personal power coming from building that trust of who and what you are, not this distortion that is encouraged by this manipulated consciousness in which we live, where we're persuaded in one way or another that we're, you know, failures at this or worthless or this or that or something else. We are so taken away from the truth of who and what we are, these beautiful spiritual beings that implicitly, by definition, love ourselves. And yet that notion seems so buried for most of us in how we live our lives. And so, as I said, her words are very close to my heart. And it seems the work we've been doing with the temples is sort of sneaking up into the public eye. We've been working on taking messages from the Templars for well over a year, and I think we're probably getting close to the end of that material. And it is fascinating, fascinating material, bringing forth so much that has not been understood. One of the things that's been interesting about the Templars is that their key information was never written down, because they wanted to protect it for many reasons. And
Richard, I hate to interrupt you, my dear, but we're right up to the moment when we've got to say goodbye.
And that's cool. And so that material will be coming forth in the form of DVD and written material, hopefully in the not-too-distant future.
Well, I've enjoyed this hour with you, Richard, and with Joan, all the great information that has come forth, and to all of our friends who listen to us, I'd like to say, give a very special goodbye, and looking forward to working with you again next week. And you, Richard?
Thank you, Carolyn, for the work you do with these shows, and thank you all for joining us and listening. Without you being here, there would be no show.
Without you, Richard, there'd be no show. Good night for now.
Goodbye, everyone.